Blog Talk Radio.
African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club with your moderator, facilitator, host, Charles Williams. And I'm joined with my lovely wife on the wheel of steel, Jalavette. Say hello, Jalavette.
Hello, Jalavette.
All right. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing so well. We're driving home the end of this the lecture series.
Yes. Yes, yes. This has been a very exciting lecture, actually. I have enjoyed this book, I think, four times previously, and this was no different. This is just a great body of work by Dr. Amos Wilson.
Yes, yes. This is a great lecture work he put together. We're in the last part. The third lecture is short. We should probably either wrap it up tonight or at most one more episode.
Okay.
We'll probably take some kind of break. But anyway, let me just go ahead and give the title. This is The Falsification of African Consciousness, subtitled Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy by Dr. Amos N. Wilson. We're in the third lecture, and the title is The Political Psychology of Black Consciousness. And tonight we'll open with his section on labeling as social control, and so we'll be bringing it on home. The appendix is quite extensive, and I'm going to leave that to the reader when they those who have the book in their possession just go ahead and enjoy that on their own, and we can move on. There are plenty of books for us to read. You know, but this is really like a transcribed lecture that he obviously gave to his students, or he toured, sharing his insights on this particular subject, and we're bringing it on home and preserving this on wax for because we bringing it in for the 9-tray.
You know.
9 deuce to get loose.
Oh, and you're going to go back one more. Okay. Yeah. You ready? Nobody laughs at your whack jokes but me, Charles. Brother Amin is on the line. And we have a caller in 216 who is, I guess, ready to say something right away. Do you want to take a call before we even begin the lecture?
If they have a quick question, go ahead, but I'm not going to be the length of answer. I'm going to get started with the text. So with that,
okay, 216, you're live on the air. Welcome to African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. Okay. What do you want to share with us tonight?
What's up? I seen this on Facebook. You know, I'm saying one of my conscious brothers always posting different blog talk conversations and talking to my 16-year-old son today. You know, just called out to me to make sure I was on this call.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you.
Dr. Amos Wilson, and to take some notes so I can take some more of this information back to these young adults out here. I mean, because white supremacy is something else. I don't even think most white people understand what white supremacy is. It's not in their favor either, most of them.
That's right.
All right, well, thank you for your...
Absolutely. All right. Thanks for checking in. We appreciate it. And stay with us. It's going to be interesting. We're almost done now. I think after this, we're going to do the slave narratives, right?
Yes, we're going to do a slave narrative. This is a particular anthology published by the Library of America. Slave narrative is basically a genre, but the Library of America published it back in the, I think it was 2008, and the Henry Gates and William L. Andrews, they edited and selected the contents for this particular edition or anthology of slave narratives.
Mm-hmm.
We decided, I believe we were open with Harriet Jacobs, but I think you said you wanted to do that one on a different program, so I'll probably...
Shh! No, go ahead. Do it on this one.
No, I didn't say which.
No, because you wanted to do Harriet Jacobs first, so we're not going to argue about it. You go ahead and do the one that you want to do. If you want to start with that particular narrative, let's do it.
No problem, because there are plenty of narratives here.
Okay. All right, so just so that everybody can go ahead and get their book, because you said we're going to take a little break and then, get started, so it'll give everybody an opportunity to get their book. So you want to let everybody know the title and all that?
The title of it is Slave Narrative. That's the title of the book.
Right, okay.
By the Library of America. Library of America, and it's edited and compiled by William Andrews and Henry Gates.
Gates, right, okay. Okay, all right. I'll get a copy of that and put it into the Facebook page, and you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/AKN and also at facebook.com/ Beyond the Book.
Yes. And also, there is also an event set for that series as well.
Right. Right. Okay.
Okay, we're ready.
Mm-hmm.
We're on page 104. And the for those who have your text with you, page 104.
Mm-hmm.
The section is labeling as social control. Noted earlier, both normal and abnormal states of consciousness and their correlated behavioral tendencies in oppressed Africans provide the means and justification for their social control by dominant Europeans, who claim an exclusive license for defining and labeling such states. These consciousness/behavioral states, once ordered and reordered by oppression, are rationalized and reversed by the mental health establishment in ways that their effects are made to appear to be caused. Under oppression, the process of labeling behavior is as much a part of the problem as it claims to be a part of the solution. For the labeling process obscures the purposes for and means by which those states labeled are generated, maintained, and changed to fit the needs of those in power. The labeling process is then no longer any demarcative, but is also generative. That is, the process itself helps to generate states of consciousness as well as denote them. Does anybody have any thoughts they'd like to share on that particular paragraph?
No, I don't. Oh, Brother Mean was on the line. Did I already say that? Hey, Brother Mean.
How you doing?
Hey. Welcome.
Yeah, I've seen that before. They where they diagnose somebody they diagnose them based off of whatever criteria, and then now you have to take medication, and now if you don't want to take a medication, now that you're diagnosed as something else, because you're the type of person who don't want to take medication. So now there's a whole other diagnosis, and it's just added on more and more and more. And who the person who's labeling you as this is not even qualified to label you as that, really.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yes, and as well, like, you know, Dr. Wilson was saying, he said these consciousness behavioral states once ordered reordered by oppression, so and rationalized and reversed by this mental health establishment, saying that they have an environmental oppressive system set up to generate the abnormal behavior. What I mean, the abnormal behavior means your dysfunctionality, the pathology, but it is to be expected to occur under oppression.
Mm-hmm.
They try to act like that like they say, you're living in poverty in the ghetto, in an overcrowded, you know, suffering from underemployment and malnutrition. That's the reason why you're having low performance in academics. No, that's not the reason why. Actually, my living in the ghetto, in poverty, is because of white supremacy.
Yeah.
That's why. Nah, which has caused me to have low performance and low achievement and, you know what I'm saying, high dependency state.
Mm-hmm.
All those are actually effects of the cause of white supremacy.
Oh, yeah.
And white supremacy, like I would tell some people, I said, white supremacy wouldn't be so bad if they confined it to Europe. But once it went global, or really universal, because they believe, you know, they teach that, you know, wherever, you know, well, they don't teach it explicitly, they teach it implicitly. And so everybody has been conditioned by their enforcement of white sovereignty or white supremacy, and have other people who are melanated people to believe they have no sovereignty, they have no right to govern themselves. resources. And so that is, and by disenfranchising, alienating, impoverishing, we suffer all of these symptoms that are, you know, various. They could be physical illnesses, disease, malnutrition, psychological disorders that we're, that he's discussing, and in which the white supremacist or white, comes in. He labels the process, but he excuses, he obscures and hides and rationalizes the original, the first cause, the origin of the problem that manifests in the patient. See, so what we're getting at is that we want to get well. We're going to have to, you know, learn how to properly respond to white supremacy, and that's, and when we respond to it, we will find the healing that we need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a funny story about similar to what you were just talking about. When I was a kid, I was diagnosed with this doesn't even sound right, chronic mental depression.
Yeah.
And so I had to talk to a doctor, and I'm sitting in a doctor's office, and I grew up in Harlem and during the heroin era. And he says, why are you so depressed? And I looked at him and I said, have you looked out the window?
Yeah.
Right.
I just stepped over three junkies to get here.
Right.
What kind of question is that? You know, that was my last session too. You know, he asked me to leave.
And the fact of the matter is, all Africans in America or in anywhere in the world are depressed.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at what we live through. Look at what we have to endure just to wake up every morning, every day.
And not only what we've lived through, but the fact that it remains unanswered.
Right. We don't have an appropriate response to the stimulus.
Yeah.
Our humanity is being challenged, and we're not responding properly. We haven't responded. I'm not going to say we never have responded properly. That's not what I'm saying.
Right.
That we don't have a unified, clear response, proper, healthy response to our condition, and that we have been perpetually, effectively doing. If we had like a unified mind to fight it, I would say it would be healthier, because we were knowing that we were doing the right thing to guarantee and ensure and to preserve our survival.
Right.
And to advance our, not just survival, but our sovereignty. I mean, that, you know, our desire to rule ourselves, to reign and control our destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Every black person, I don't care how wealthy he is, how much money he has, he knows that he's really poor, because his wealth is controlled and by a foreigner.
Right, outside of his community.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that if those foreigners aren't pleased with what he has done or is going to do, his wealth will disappear. That is anxiety.
Right.
He knows he has to betray himself in order to acquire a comfortable, apparently comfortable, standard of living. That's, he's depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Victim and a perpetrator at the same time. Some of those people are victim perpetrators.
Right.
You know, we got to just realize that we all in this together. We all respond to it. I'm not going to say everybody responds differently, but everybody responds in similar fashions to different varying degrees of intensity in the way we respond. But we'll continue with the second paragraph here on page of the subject, the labeling and social control, on page 104. The authority to label consciousness and behavior reflects social power inequalities between the labelers and the labeled. Therefore, the authority to label is a central factor in the process of social power and often functions to maintain or increase power inequalities. Labeling behavior as normal or abnormal may contribute to maintaining or enhancing prevailing power inequalities, in that by directing attention to their purported intra-psychic subculture or genetic sources, the causal relevance of other social, political, economic phenomena in generating and maintaining such behavior are downplayed, dismissed, or obscured. break. That's exactly what we've been saying. That if you get into talking about the numerous areas of people activity, as Neely Fuller and Dr. Welsing discussed, and how the European global white supremacy ideology affects non-white people, and you start talking about how it really relates, they'll say, "Oh man, that's not really important." You know, you're really just making excuses for, you know, why your people are in a pathetic situation.
Well, if you even look at, you know, make a reference to a conversation that we had earlier about when we were talking about the power of labeling or naming, that is dominion. When you have the ability to name, that's actually what happened as soon as many of our ancestors arrived here. It was the first thing that happened is they, you know, passed their, you know, brutalization and various other, you know, accostings that they had to go through. But they were named, and that there is dominion in that. And by that same, in using that same train of thought and giving these people the ability to label our children when they're in school, call, you know, as Brother Amin had mentioned, the situation that he'd gone through. But then also, in a broader sense, when we talk about petitioning these people, in some way trying to appeal to their humanity,
oh, yeah,
as it were, asking them to grant us our human rights as though they are the owners and purveyors of such rights, you see. So much of the dominion that they have, they are given.
Right. We give it to them. Dr. Wilson discusses that on page 22 of this lecture, in the lecture one. He says there is a connection between naming and dominion, between naming and bringing into reality. When we permit another people to name and define, we permit another people to gain dominion and control over us.
Right.
Now, that's, I mean, everybody that has seen Roots 1, 1977, recalls the brutal breaking of Kunta Kinte by the overseer, that Irish overseer, and with regard to him not accepting the name,
mm-hmm.
And that whole community was that plantation. They shouldn't maybe get away with that kind of thing, but that showed how broken the black man had become to that at that point in time. That we were accepting. You got to take a new name. I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. You know what I'm saying? That's what people, you know, they, I don't know why he makes it a big fuss. Just go and take the thing and get down off the post, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
They would put a hook and tie to a post and beat you, and beat us, excuse me. But we have to understand that we have to take back the authority to name, like, say, if white supremacy were abolished by us or, you know, or somebody, anybody, today or tomorrow, we have to set about the task of nomenclature, of naming things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the, we can't, if we were to sit back and say, oh, everything already has a name, why go through all that trouble? If we had that kind of thing going on, we'd be in serious trouble. I'm not saying that you can't leave any names. The point is, you must decide what names remain the same and what names will be changed. You must make that call.
And before you can make the call, Charles, you have to, I think, understand what names have been given to things that are to our detriment.
Oh, yeah.
You see, we don't pay attention to what we're calling things. Like, one of the most obvious is how everything that is called black or dark is bad or negative or evil.
Right, right. We have to.
Right. When we're naming things, you have to understand if you're going to rename, you're beginning to reshape consciousness.
Basically, the spirit behind the name.
Right. The energy that is released, you know, when you're saying certain words, certain ideas go along with that, certain energies. And
just
so,
like,
yeah,
that is compared to fair, you know.
Right. Fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what? Unfair skin?
Fair skin. Mm-hmm. If pale complexion or lacking in melanin is fair,
then melanated is unfair.
That's what they, right, that's what's being said. So we would have to, I would say, get out of that whole linguistic context altogether.
Absolutely.
They have to be abandoned for I would say, the vast part, you know. Most of it had to really go. You had to rename animals, you know, constellations, everything, you know, everything had to go. You know.
All right.
But that's what would have to be done, and people who really want to, you know, break the chains of oppression, you have to, you know, go about that kind of idea, at least accept that as a necessary.
Right.
Good, a necessary good, a mandatory good. He says, on page 105, labeling and defining behavior is part of a power rationing process in which certain segments of a society are granted exclusive legitimacy and power to explain, diagnose, treat certain states of consciousness and form behavior not granted to others. The process of granting exclusive rights may be referred to as the granting of authority to the recipient, person, or group, based on custom, competence, other legal precedents, or codes. The authority is granted a socially acknowledged right to command the compliance of others under specified circumstances. So we're talking about this particular guild of psychologists who has been given a charter by the scientific establishment to be able to grant titles of or to classify, to label persons exhibiting a certain behavior, and they have to they had to establish a certain competence or other legal precedence, a code, you know, they have their own diagnostic codes, whatever. They write this all this paperwork jargon up, and they're given this authority by the white supremacy power structure to go out and label all the, you know, people that we've affected, you know. And so that's what they do. And they run out and say, if we were to go out and say, and we would start diagnosing behaviors, and you know what they would say? What qualifies you to name or classify behavior? You're not a doctor. That's what they're going to say.
True.
A lot of people are going to say that.
A lot of our own folks are going to say that.
Yeah, a lot of our own people are going to say that. Say, you're not a doctor. What kind of training you? Where are your credentials? What are your credentials? You know, there ain't no real school now, is it? That's what they're going to say.
Our own people are going to say it first.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And when you know what they mean by real school. You know, a Mr. Charlie approved school. You know?
Right.
And you don't have the authority that has not been given you by the oppressor to label, and they're going to try to see if they can, you know, get you penalized or some kind of way punished by the structure, the oppressive body, government, governing bodies that has been, you know, that they want to defer to say, you know, say this person, strip this person or censor that person from classifying things, because they're saying that they have taken the right from the creator to do that. It's time to make the announcement.
Right. Thanks to everybody for joining us tonight. We're running into the last few minutes of the broadcast. If you're listening on the browser or if you're in the chat room, hello to everyone visiting us, all of our guests. You can give us a call at 323-580-5707, and you can listen to the remainder of the broadcast. Otherwise, you can catch in the archives. Again, the phone number is 323-580-5707. If you can't join us for the remainder of the broadcast, we will see you next week, same time.
All right. Thank you for that announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody have anything to say about that section before we move on?
Well, it's like the only way you can object to the authority is to be legitimized by the authority who is supposed to legitimize you so that you could object to them.
Exactly.
And that's not going to happen.
Well, right. I mean, that's what Dr. Wilson had to go and get a psychiatry PhD and then study white supremacy from an African perspective and then talk about white supremacy. could have easily done this without getting a PhD.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He didn't need the PhD to do what he's doing, to do the work that he did.
But he did need it to be able to talk to us.
He needed to talk to us. He just had to go through with it just so people would listen to him. And if he had not done it, the most he could have done was become a religious figure.
Right.
He would have had to start a religious movement. Not to say anything's wrong with that.
Right.
That's the only way he would be able to accomplish. Not to say he wasn't going to incur any resistance as a religious figure doing this. Matter of fact, I have a quote by Dr. Wilson. One of the sections that he was talking about Elijah Muhammad as the greatest psychologist of the black community ever had. I wrote a note for it on the I have it right here on page 30. He was saying it's about being able to protect and advance our survival, but if we get caught up in the minutiae of trying to figure out whether there are good white people or bad white people and others in between, we may find ourselves being destroyed in our studies. That's why we have to recognize that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was the greatest psychologist we ever had, and many of us still have not come to understand that yet. So, Dr. Amos Wilson said on page 30 of this lecture series in lecture 1 that Elijah Muhammad was the greatest psychologist we ever had, and Elijah Muhammad didn't get a PhD.
Right.
I don't even know if he went to college or not. I don't know. I mean, someone may know that. I don't. Let me just say that. But to be able to instruct, you know, his initiates, you know, Elijah Muhammad couldn't go through the university pathway. He went through the religious pathway, or even the Masonic pathway, because he did write a book on the secret teachings of Freemasonry. So he may have just done it through Freemasonry.
Mm-hmm.
Amos Wilson had to do it the way that he did it so that he could, you know, get the credibility of the white supremacist establishment, and then he could do the work and we that we received. Okay, we're on next paragraph. He said, authority is not merely ascribed or granted to a particular person or social group in a society for pragmatic reasons alone. The social and political ascription of or granting of authority is usually rationalized or legitimized in terms of an underlying ideology. Once the ideology which rationalizes and legitimates a particular authority structure gains general and social acceptance and the political approbation of the ruling regime, it not only tends to delegitimize alternative or opposing ideologies, but also tends to empower and legitimate the ruling regime along with those who control its operational apparatus. This may occur in spite of the rather obvious failure of the ideology and the authority structure it legitimates to adequately explain, resolve, or significantly ameliorate the problems which they ostensibly establish to explain or resolve, that is, the criminal justice or mental health establishment, along with their legitimating ideologies. When a ruling regime, for example, the white supremacist establishment, persists in maintaining an ideological authority structure in power in spite of its apparent dysfunctionality, that is measured by its inability to resolve its assigned problems, one may infer from this the possibility that the ideological authority structure's real but obscured function may be primarily to help to rationalize, legitimate, and maintain the ruling social order, the ruling regime's social order and power relations. It achieves these ends by attempting to define and resolve its assigned problems in ways which do not indict the regime and its operational structure as the probable causes of the problems to begin with, because the presence of such problems may be utilized to actually help to justify, preserve, and empower the ruling regime. And that's the end of that section. And an easy example is like he gave an example. He said the criminal justice system or mental health establishment. So we have prisons and mental health institutions drive people crazy, and then they make a business out of incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. And so they hire teams of expert apologists, that is, psychologists and legal experts, lawyers and whatnot, professors, lawyer, law professors and whatever, to make, you know, long excuses, discourse. They write technical papers and journals, and they get PhDs and whatnot, and postdoctorates and studies and whatnot, to legitimate, to irrationalize why they do what they're doing. Say it's necessary, it's not our fault, it's their problem, it's their fault, but we are here to solve it and keep the society running and operating smooth, and without us, you'd have anarchy and you wouldn't be safe. And that's how they do it and keep it going, and everybody, you know, wants to, you know, go home in the day without having to worry about these problems. Okay, we'll, how many minutes do we have left?
About five.
Okay, well, that's it for tonight. Anybody else have any thoughts, final thoughts they'd like to lend to the last session?
You know, I was thinking about what you just said. That just happened during the Iraq War. There was the issues with these folks being tortured, but there being doctors overseeing it.
Right.
And now the doctors take an oath. So you altered the oath.
Mm-hmm.
In order to justify that you were doing that. And so we see that in the healthcare field. You know, mental health care and law, just like he was talking about.
Yeah.
But then they take an oath to do no harm, but they give you medicines all the time that they know have side effects that they are prepared to give you medicines for.
That's
so it's not, they don't keep that oath anyway.
Right.
No.
According to white supremacy, any oath given or taken is only as valid as it benefits white supremacy.
Right. Did you just make that up, or have you read that somewhere?
Oh, I read it after I made it up.
Okay. And the brother in the 216, before we go, if you have any final thoughts before we leave, hello. Oh, wait, hold on. Don't say anything because you're not up yet. Okay, the switchboard isn't working. All right, so that's it.
All right. We'll see you next week, and we'll discuss domination and mislabeling of behavior and the medicalization of social problems.
All righty.
All right, and that'll be the end of lecture three.
Okay, and so we have how many more lectures before we end this?
That's it. We'll wrap it up with that.
This is the last? This is it?
We'll do one more.
Okay. Which one?
I'm saying we'll do one more from this lecture. Oh, it's only three lectures in this book. Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm saying. Is this the last show for this book?
And this is the last. It's one more show in this. Yeah.
Okay, one more show. Okay, and then we're going to be finished with this book. All right, 216, I have you up. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, in June, Brother Umar Johnson was in Cleveland at Cleveland State University,
mm-hmm.
and he gave a lecture for like 4.5 hours, and it's just good to see that the conscious community, man, for the people that are taking this information in, the labeling, and you know what I'm saying, the drugs they want to put our little children on, or they're causing our boys to be sterile,
mm-hmm.
and just messing up the righteousness, the true righteousness that they know about in the world, and it's just, I don't know, man. I don't see any other way to solve this without some sort of mental and spiritual and physical revolution. I mean, they control the system, you know, they control the money, they control the natural resources. You know, a brother in Utah just got put in jail for 90 days for collecting rainwater.
Right.
You know what I mean? We're dealing with some sick and twisted people. And
right.
And how do you, without some type of change, like we're talking about the our consciousness being changed, how do you allow a group of people to tell you that putting out a container and receiving water from the sky is now in your control? How do we get to that place?
Because we don't produce anything. We don't have any unity, and we don't have an army.
They didn't produce the water coming from the sky.
No.
But they told you that they have control of it.
Right.
Yes. I mean, because they're crazy, they're sick. I don't think some of these people have souls.
Right, and they have to be put out of their misery.
Yeah, the problem is we defer to that right that Dr. Wilson mentioned in his lecture. They claim that they have the right not to really control the rain, but control my response to the rain.
Right.
See, not to say that they don't have weather control weaponry or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The point is they want to control the way I respond to nature or respond naturally.
Or respond to them, really.
And them, too. I'm saying. And them, too, but I'm just speaking just to the issue of the rainwater.
Right. But I'm saying the bigger issue is that I can tell you it's classic bully tactics.
That's it, yes.
Whatever I tell you. If I tell you you only breathe in on Thursday, standing on one leg, do it. And then you do it.
You can only inhale on the count of three. And five.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You can only exhale on one and two.
It's just that simple. It's classic bully tactics.
Right.
And we have to see it for what it is and then begin the process of backing up out of this, you know, which is kind of what I was getting at. But anyway, I didn't mean to over you know.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to just share some, you know, drop some game on that.
I wanted to drop some game on that. But go ahead with what you're saying.
What I'm saying. Right. We got to realize that we have a right to respond to nature and white supremacy appropriately, even if nobody else understands. So you're not going to be understood in your quest for sovereignty. And a lot of people in our community don't want sovereignty. And it's not necessary that a whole lot of people agree with your methods of doing what it is that you are going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You feel more. I'm not saying don't do. You know, think, check, plan. You can never plan enough, perhaps. But, you know, you're going to have to eventually take whatever action you want to take, and you have to be, you know, willing to do it with very few people agreeing with you.
Absolutely.
That's the most important thing any person must know.
With anything, the path of least resistance is the one that's taken. And so, you know, when we're talking about this particular path, there's great resistance.
Right.
And who wants to go there first?
Right, and most people are afraid of what they're gonna of the cost. They don't wanna risk anything. They figure, oh, it's so much.
Not worth it.
Right, it's worth it. Right, and they're totally wrong. They have everything to gain.
Right,
and actually, black people have nothing to lose.
Right.
So
that's when you get to the dangerous game.
That's when you get in
there. And that doesn't have anything to lose.
So if you plan properly. Because you know, I'm not saying what I'm saying. I don't plan to lose. Plan to win. But once you've made all the preparations and you've studied and you got yourself together, then it's time to go out there and put match the talk with the walk.
Right.
And you have to lay it all out there to put it up. Then you go 110. You know, 100+% with it. But don't go 100+% poorly planned.
Right.
Because then you know you're gonna be discouraging to others that want to do the same.
Right.
Because they're gonna, right. And so you want to inspire others with your efforts.
Right.
And if there were 20 million people collecting water, he wouldn't have went to jail.
There you go.
Exactly right. More people should start collecting water. Just
I'm right. That's it.
So to go out there and say you're gonna collect, you're gonna arrest and jail one man. Now, all of us gonna collect the water. They have to overturn it. They release that brother. Now that's what needs to happen.
Right.
He needs some support.
Everybody in Utah need to have gallons of water lined in their driveway.
That's right. That's appropriate response to that. And not only in Utah, but anywhere else where, you know, they may have those kind of orders that they have not yet enforced. And then our black politicians and legal experts that we have all across the country making plenty of money doing nothing for the community mostly should be challenging those types of making sure that they should be watching and making sure those things don't even get on the books.
You're out, Checky. We out. That's it.
All right. Peace.
All right, we got to go. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Okay. I'll find you guys.